You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Anybody who loves sports has probably spent time daydreaming about what it would be like to be a sports reporter, getting paid to watch games, to talk to athletes. Cynthia Lambert did that. She worked for the Detroit News, covering the Detroit Red Wings for 12 seasons, including their Stanley Cup wins in 1997 and 1998. Now she's taken those seasons of sports reporting and she's packed them into her new memoir, Power Play, My Life Inside the Red Wings Locker Room. Cindy Lambert, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You started covering the Wings when they were the worst team in the league. Do you think you or anyone else in that locker room expected the dead Wings of 1986 to become the back-to-back Stanley Cup champs you covered in 97 and 98?
You know, it was really an evolution, and you can look at the different chapters almost in Red Wings history of that pocket of time, you know, where they hired Jacques Demers, who was a very affable coach who was very good with the media, and he won the media over. And everyone just kind of, the tide turned emotionally, I think, about the Wings. And it wasn't a hate relationship of you guys are horrible and we're never going to go see the games too. I know you guys aren't great, but you know what? We like Jacques. We like the energy. We love Steve Yzerman. We love all these new guys coming onto the team, and we can see some momentum. So I think people who started watching the Wings or really got behind them in the mid-'80s and then late-'80s, you know, the fruits of that labor really paid off as they saw them steadily progress into the Stanley Cup team that we witnessed.
Yes, you certainly had a fascinating chunk of Red Wing history that spanned your career. And you started actually playing sports at a pretty tender age, as you tell us in your book, including hockey on the backyard ice rink with your brothers.
Yes, yes. You know, when you grow up on the east side of Detroit in a house that had about 1,000 square feet and a dog, of course, you had to be outside a lot. And so my dad, who was a Detroit police officer, he flooded our backyard to make an ice rink for us so that they wouldn't have to drive us to Heilman to go skating and pay for it. And sure enough, I think it was a couple weeks into it, I'm out there in my boots because I wasn't a very good skater with my figure skates that were so uncomfortable. I was checked into the fence by a neighborhood boy, and I flipped back, and then I was in the hospital with a concussion for about 2 or 3 days. Mm-mm. And so there went the ice rink.
There you go, no more ice rink. And you did play sports even going through school, but it's interesting you point out in your book you don't think that growing up, even though growing up playing sports kind of eased you into the world of sports reporting, you don't think it's a must.
I don't think so. I mean, you're not playing the sport that you're covering. You're not doing a first-person story. You're there as the observer, and you're there as the investigator to find out, why did the coach play this player? Why are they, you know, I noticed this about the power play. And you're the one there, if you have the guts and if you have, you know, you can leave your ego at the door and just go into a coach's room or talk to the general manager or a scout or the player and just say, I don't understand why you did this, or why did you make that decision instead of this, or why aren't you doing this? You can get a lot of great information, and you know that from all your years of interviewing people. If you leave yourself open for possibilities, then you find out a lot more. So I think in some ways, if you go in not having a sports background, you can be a little more honest and a little more transparent, I guess, when you're asking questions. But like you said, I did play a lot of sports. I started playing softball or baseball at the age of 7. And then in high school, I lettered in 3 sports, tennis and volleyball and then softball. And I played basketball in middle school, and so there was always something, you know, frisbee in the street, golf, anything where I could get out there and move and compete.
So when you headed off to Wayne State, was sports journalism in your kind of in your sights?
I actually started out at Macomb Community mm-hmm. College, and all the tests that I took in high school said I would be great in business. Those tests are wrong. Let me tell you that. I did get my associate's in business, and I felt so frustrated, though, because I really did not enjoy what I was doing, and I thought I needed probably a gap year. So I moved out to California thinking I would continue my degree at UCLA in economics and moved in with some relatives. And after being there for about 6 months, I realized I don't want to live here, and I got the crazy idea about pursuing sports journalism because I enjoyed writing. I loved sports. I put them together. I thought, why not? And so I came back. I applied at Wayne State, got in at Wayne State, and started my career in 1985, actually, a year after I went back to Wayne State.
Everybody has that first moment in their career, no matter what it is, where you're terrified, but you've got to go do it. And what was your first, oh my goodness, I really have to do this?
That was in 1984. I was at Wayne State, and I worked also at the Northeast Detroiter, which was a free newspaper. But because it was a real newspaper, I could then get credentials to cover the Red Wings games. They had an exhibition game in Port Huron. And I drove to Port Huron, and I'm going to cover this game, and it was going to be my first time in the locker room. And I knew I could do it. This is part of the job. If you can't go in the locker room, you can't cover sports, because that's where all the interviews are done. So I psyched myself up, and I'm sitting in the press box, and my stomach is churning, and I'm getting so nervous. I'm thinking, what's it going to be like? I didn't know anyone else who was a sports reporter. So I couldn't ask, you know, what's the scene going to be like? Is it going to be calm? Are they going to hate me? Are they going to ignore me? What's going to happen? So I walk into the locker room, and it's total chaos. And I thought, this is not a private atmosphere at all. So I was a little relieved. But there, you know, it was really kind of an intimidating environment. But I was doing some of the interviews. I was doing okay. I'm like, you're doing fine, Cindy. You're going to make it out of this alive. And then Sean Burr, who was a draft pick that year, he was 18 years old, comes out of the shower with a towel wrapped around him, takes one look at me, and shrieks. It never occurred to me that a player would be afraid of me. And that just, everything fell apart at that point. I almost collapsed. Kevin Allen, who's with USA Today to this day, he couldn't stop laughing. And he came up to me and he just said, I have never seen anything that funny again or ever. And we chatted for a little bit. I did a couple more interviews. His teammates led Sean away to the safety of his little stall
area. Gave him smelling salts.
Yes, tried to calm him down, which anyone who knew Sean knew that his mouth ran at a million miles an hour. So I know he said a lot of stuff, but we became friends through the years, and it was a funny thing to laugh at.
And you were a rare bird in the mid-'80s. Today, I suspect, you know, just watch sports on TV, and there are women everywhere. Was not the case what the time we're talking about when you were starting your career.
No, there weren't many women at all. There was, in Detroit, there was Ann Doyle, who was on TV. At the Free Press, Jeanette Howard had started there. But, you know, she was with the Free Press. She covered Olympics and basketball, and our paths never crossed. And when they did, it was nice to be able to chat with her. But no, I was pretty much on my own. And then when I started traveling with the Wings, though, I got to meet some of the reporters in the other cities, like Helene Elliott and Sherry Ross in New York, and Cammie Clark down in Tampa, and Karen Kraus out in California, and Nancy Marapice in Boston. There were several, but again, still a very small percentage, but all. And I don't know, maybe other female reporters are like this in other specialty areas, I guess you'd say, but they were all so nice. We all got along great.
The sisterhood.
It really was.
Although you say you don't consider yourself a feminist, you consider yourself an equalist.
Yes, yes. Meaning. I think, you know, I just always, growing up even, I mean, I had three brothers. I had to fight for my rights in that house. And I had a real, I think I was born with it, a real strong sense of you don't just do something because you're a girl, or you don't just get allowed to do something because you're a boy. And I challenged that one night at our dinner table. My brothers, asked my dad if he would play pickle with them after dinner. That's, you know, running bases. And I was so excited because my dad was always busy. He worked a part-time job painting houses and, you know, a cop. And I was so excited. And my brother John laughed at me and said, ha, you have to clean the kitchen, because that was my job every night because I was the girl. They would help my dad mow the lawn once a week. And there were three of them. They would rotate. So maybe once a month they would have a job to do, you know, among taking out the trash or whatever. So I contested it. And I spoke my mind. And my dad just laughed. And I said, it's not fair that, you know, I have to do this every night. And my dad kind of chuckled. And my mom put her fork down and said, she's right. From now on, Jerry and John, you clean it one night. Steve and Cindy, you clean it the other. We're going to divide this equally now. So I think that's where the little water was poured on that seed.
I'm speaking with former Detroit News hockey writer Cindy Lambert. Her memoir is Power Play, My Life Inside the Red Wings Locker Room. So thinking of the years you covered the Wings from the mid-'80s to the back-to-back Stanley Cup winning seasons in 97 and 98, you had a lot of personalities you covered. So give us a quick memory about Coach Scotty Bowman.
Oh, tough. Scotty is one of the most complicated human beings I've ever encountered in my life. One minute you think that you've got a great relationship and he's being honest and you're having a great dialogue and you had a great interview, and the next day he won't look at you, or the next day he tells you, oh, Chris Osgood's going to be in goal, and then Mike Vernon comes out as the goalie. So there was a constant off balance with Scotty.
Steve Yzerman.
Oh, total class. I am so grateful to this day, and I think the perspective I've had over the last 20 years after I left the paper has helped me appreciate Steve Yzerman more. For at his age, when he became captain of that team, in a city like Detroit, where it's very focused on sports, I never had a bad experience with Steve Yzerman. Interviewing him, if he had an issue with something I wrote, he would walk up to me, look me in the eye, speak his piece very respectfully, open it up for dialogue. We could agree, we could disagree. He could persuade me, I could persuade him. But there was never any lingering animosity or passive aggressiveness. He was just complete class. And you cannot ever underestimate the impact Steve Yzerman had on that team. And he is one of the, obviously, the main reason they ended up winning those cups.
Vladimir Konstantinov.
Vladdy. You know, I remember watching him before he came to the Wings, thinking, oh my God, look at that guy skate. Look at how mean he is. And then I saw him after, and he was scary looking to me. You know, gaunt and those high cheekbones, and, you know, obviously didn't speak any English, and everything seemed to come out so gruff. Then I got to know him, and his sense of humor was beautiful. And really just, I almost felt like he was almost a little afraid. You know, he was this enormous talent, but he kept to himself, and he would just sit and observe. And it broke my heart with that accident, that and accident. Still does to this day.
Bob Probert.
Oh, I loved Bob. Obviously, you know, here I am saying I love all these players. They were just great people to work with. Bob Probert was such a good person. And he had a horrible affliction.
And of addiction. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And he was a warrior. I mean, he fought this disease and the demons that were inside him. And sometimes he won and sometimes he didn't. But like Steve Yzerman, Bob Probert, and this may surprise people, but I never had harsh words with Bob Probert, even with the stuff I had to write about him and the questions I had to ask him. He never came at me and showed anger toward me. And I always tried to be fair to him. And I think maybe in some ways I was probably a little soft covering him, because I just recognized how much of a challenge his whole life probably was because of the stuff he had to deal with. But amazing player, and loved to watch him fight.
He was.
I loved it.
What is something about the sports reporter's life people would be shocked to know?
I think the loneliness. I was with the team much more than I was with my own family, more than I was even at my own office. In fact, during the middle of covering the Wings, at some point after 5 or 6 years, I was told, come and clear your desk out at the office. We need someone to use that. Just work out of your house. So I was around all these people who were more like my colleagues. You know, Keith Primeau and Sergei Fedorov, they were my colleagues, Jacques Demers, Scotty Bowman, Brian Murray, but they weren't. It felt like they were, but they really weren't. They were my subjects, and I had to cover them, and so I had to keep a distance. And at that point, I was the only woman. For a while, Viv Bernstein came and covered the Wings for the Free Press, and we hung out a little bit. That felt, you know, comfortable to do, but otherwise, I was pretty much on my own when we were on the road. And when we were home, it was great. But on the road, until I made friends in the different cities, I was pretty much on my own.
So you called it a career after that second Stanley Cup win. Did going through the process of writing this book and digging through memories and unpacking all that, did it make you ever kind of think, yeah, maybe I do miss it?
Not a single bit. In fact, that was one of the things that surprised me the most when I left. And I was immersed in my career. I loved my job. But I knew that last year I couldn't keep up this pace. I wanted to have a family. I wanted a little bit more of a different type of life. And I knew my personality. There are women and men who still cover hockey, baseball, football, basketball, have families. They're fine. I wasn't one of those people. I knew I couldn't do that. It was tough, and it took a long time and a lot of soul searching and a lot of, you know, pros and cons and all this, and I overthought it. But once I decided and I gave my notice in November of 98, I walked away and I didn't even have the desire to go to a game. I thought, oh my gosh, what happened? How long has this been going on? But there were just other areas of my life that opened up. And soon I had a child, and then I was watching, you know, Blue's Clues and getting up at 4:35 in the morning and going to bed at 8 o'clock at night. So,
do you go to games now?
You know, I just went to a game a couple weeks ago. They played Tampa Bay, and they lost. But it was a great game. There were a lot of fights. Got to see Steve Yzerman on the Jumbotron. I don't think they call it a Jumbotron anymore. They don't even call it a game anymore. They say, welcome to the show. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't like that at all. It's a game, people.
It's a game. Well, the book is really a fun read. A lot of insider good stuff. And as you say, well, I'm not here to be salacious. I'm here to kind of tell you what it's like to be inside the Red Wings locker room. And you did a beautiful job. Power Play by Cynthia Lambert. It was great talking with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great talking with you.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.